can I ask,
you may not wish to tell me, what is your sort of, what sort of income level are we talking about with your state pension and your
state
teacher's pension?
State pension and a small teacher's pension.
Gives you roughly how much a year? You don't have to tell me, of course.
No, well, I won't.
Okay.
Go into it.
Thanks, Nicole. I'm just going to thank you for that anyway. I'm just going to, this email may or may not help meet your condition, as it were. Tom Vellicott writes, regarding the debate regarding means testing bus passes, these are only of use to those in urban areas with a good bus service. Those pensioners living in rural areas in parts of Somerset are reliant on the use of a car or the local community to help them. A far better solution would be to remove the bus pass completely and increase the threshold before tax is paid for those over 65, or increase the state pension. In this way, all pensioners will benefit. Roger Castles from Knighton.
Yes, quite frankly, I think any incentive that there is to keep cars off the road has to be a good thing, and that's why I'm all for the free bus pass for the over 60s, except because the state pension age is rising, I would suggest that actually the age at which the bus pass is issued rises also to maybe 65 rather than 60.
Okay, with that, I'm going to leave it right there. We've had a lot of calls on that and other issues. I hope you found the to and fro interesting. We're going to be back next week for the last programme of the year. Any questions? And the panel will include, amongst others, Michael Portillo. I hope you can join us. We're going to be at the Sir John Cass Redcoat School in Stepney in London. For now, thank you for your tweets, thank you for your emails, and thank you for all your calls, and have a very good afternoon.
Any Answers was presented by Jonathan Dimbleby and produced by Lisa Jenkinson. Love, religion, physics, and the random nature of chance in the Saturday play The Gate of Angels in a moment. Over on Radio 4 Extra, starting on Monday, there's the radio premiere of Doctor Who, The Hornet's Nest. It's just before Christmas, and the Doctor summons an old friend to help him with a problem.
I was on a little break here in the peaceful countryside, and I happened upon a local paper's garbled report of the death of a cabinet minister. He'd been trampled to death in his own bed, the terrible imprint of a hoof upon his forehead. A hoof print belonging to an alpine ibex, Mike.
Not a goat one normally associates with Sussex.
Quite.
Soon the trail leads to what drives the creature's attacks, and Mike Yates and the Doctor combine forces to defeat a deadly infestation. Tom Baker, that's the one with the jelly babies and the stripy scarf rather than the fish fingers and custard, stars in The Hornet's Nest, starting on Monday night in BBC Radio 4 Extra's Seventh Dimension at 6, and again at midnight. Now here on BBC Radio 4, Books on the BBC. Our Saturday play is a dramatisation of Penelope Fitzgerald's 1990 novel set in Edwardian London and Cambridge, The Gate of Angels.
To imagine anything means to make a new junction between two currents of activity going along two or more separate tracks. Imagine the wind so strong, so far inland. I feel I'm riding the high seas, not pedalling back to Cambridge.
They can't get up, you know.
What's that, Skippy?
The cows with willow in their hair. Poor beasts.
They're still munching.
Hey! You see that couple ahead of us? Bet you a pint I can overtake them before you can!
Skippy!
I've just remembered! It's sheep that can't get up! Sheep!
The relief of it!
There goes the cost of a pint. But what is that amidst a vision of such disorder? Treetops on the earth, cow heels on the air.
Whoa!
Person beside me. Beside me, in a bed. This beautiful person. My God, what luck.
Hello. My name's Frederick Fairley. I'm a lecturer in practical physics and a junior fellow at Cambridge University. I think I've had an accident. I think you too have had an accident. I think you must be the young lady who was riding in front of me.
I'm Daisy Saunders. Where's my cycle?
Well, I don't know where it is, Mrs. Saunders.
I'm not. It's just... it's not mine.
I don't know where my bike is either. Or my clothes. Otherwise I could get up and look.
Don't let that stop you. I've seen hundreds of men without their clothes on.
I think you may be a little bit confused, Mrs. Saunders.
I'm not Mrs. Saunders. Where's the fellow I was riding with?
Well, I don't know where he is. I don't care where he is. Why are we talking about him?
Venetia, there are two strangers in the nursery. One is a man who's lost his clothes. The other is a woman who was also... My name is Rayburn. I am a scholar and this is my house.
Oh, my dears. I left you to sleep in peace until the doctor came.
They are ill.
The farmer's son brought them in. I didn't want you to be disturbed.
I have been disturbed.
Mrs. Rayburn?
Oh, it's Mr. Fairley, isn't it? I found a visiting card in your jacket pocket. And your wife?
I'm not Mrs. Fairley.
Ooh. With your wedding ring, my dear, and... well, you were together in a heap on the road.
I'm not his wife.
Oh, the doctor. We'll soon have you comfortable.
They look far too comfortable now.
My name is Frederick Fairley. And this beautiful person... two currents of activity going along two or more separate tracks. Can imagination create reality?
You are attracted towards atomic research.
I am a lecturer in practical physics and a junior fellow of...
I've been to Ernest Rutherford's lectures. It all hangs together.
I will remember which college in a moment. What do I remember?
I expect it will hang together for a few years. The belief that an invisible god created the world and designed everything for a purpose lasted much longer than that. But we've given it all up now, because we've got no evidence that God exists.
You can only reason from what you can observe.
But atoms are unobservables. An atom is not a reality, it is just a provisional idea.
What do you think is to be done?
Oh, admit the wrong direction and go back to what can be known through the senses. If they don't depend on true evidence, scientists are no better than gossips. So, I need an assistant whom I will pay £100 a year to take my students off my hands while I concentrate on my calling as Professor of Observable Experimental Physics. With some recompense for this small payment, I can guarantee also a junior fellowship at St. Angelicus.
Well...
Don't answer me now. Think it over. Talk to your father, perhaps.
When you told me you wanted to study natural sciences, I took it for granted that sooner or later you would come to the conclusion that you had no further use for the soul. All I ask is that you don't talk to me about it.
It's a question of evidence, Pa. I can find no evidence that Christianity is true. But it's not impossible that one day I shall discover a satisfactory reason to believe in it.
Oh, and then you'd give it another chance. How very good of you, Freddy. What would you consider a satisfactory reason?
Well... I want to know the truth about the way things are, and the only evidence we can get is from our own senses and from the senses of other people who can communicate what they've found out. As soon as something is completely described, it's explained, like the anatomy of the human body. There's no more to say about that. It can be described, therefore it's ordinary. Well, time will come when we shall see everything that once seemed extraordinary as ordinary.
Would you prefer that, Freddy?
What is completely described is completely explained.
What would you consider a satisfactory reason for believing that Christ rose from the dead?
So, Mr. Fairley, after 3 days, you have risen again.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Rayburn. Where is Miss Saunders?
She got up, dressed, said she was going back to London. She thanked us. Not that we expected thanks.
We did expect them, Venetia. I never remember expecting them more.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Mr. Rayburn. Did she mention which part of London she was going to?
I'm afraid not.
I hear that you are a fellow of St. Angelicus. If my wife had known that, she would not, of course, have made the mistake of thinking you a married man.
No, indeed. For the past 30 years, the fellows in other colleges have been allowed to marry. But in St. Angelicus, even in 1911, that is forbidden. Which I did, of course, know when I accepted the fellowship.
When James I said that a man should pray at King's, dine at Trinity, and study at Jesus, he added, on one occasion at least, and he should sleep in peace at Angel's. Yeah. But, as we know, at St. Angelicus, just one guest can be invited at a time. And that honour, Dr. Matthews, is often yours, since we enjoy your mystery stories. Will you do us the honour?
Not tonight, I'm afraid, Master. Instead, I would like your opinion on a real mystery that I have been pondering here at Angel's. That strangely tall and narrow gate in the southwest wall, is it really the only access to the college, apart from the front entrance?
Indeed it is.
Yet it is always kept locked.
Always.
But it is noted in the annals that it has twice been found standing open. Once in 1423, on the night of your founder Pope Benedict's death, and once in 1869, when the first women's college was permitted to open. Yet there was no mention on either occasion of who opened your gate, nor of who shut it again.
Well, no one has the authority to do either.
But if anyone had, or even if they had not, and if it were to stand open, who or what do you imagine might come in?
Oh, I should not like to think about that.
So, science is leading you nowhere, and quite conceivably backwards.
Is that where I'm going? Backwards? So when did this story begin? It's only in books that stories have beginnings or endings. No fragments. Nothing happens in a book by chance. I leave the Rayburns and go to the police station to collect my bicycle, which they had found with that of Miss Daisy Saunders at the side of the road. Hers had been hired from a shop in Silver Street, to which it had been returned. I ride mine back to Angel's.
This grass is reserved for fellows of this college. Should you be walking on this grass?
Yes, I should, Master.
It's Fred Fairley, of course. Normally, you cross the court directly from the south-southwest to the north-northeast. But this evening, you did not do this. You must have walked up the path, and that confused me. Didn't you have an accident?
Yes, I did.
On your bicycle or off your bicycle?
I suppose both.
Please, take my arm and we will walk around the walnut tree.
Certainly.
There will be a good crop of walnuts this year.
How can you tell, sir?
I can smell them. What, you think because I am blind?
Oh, no, Master, I can't even tell by looking.
And there are kittens somewhere in the college. Female kittens. I heard them distinctly. Their first sounds are angry, and the pleading note comes later. They must be removed.
I am not interested in looking for kittens. The police said they would make every effort to trace Miss Saunders. But that is not good enough. I don't want her traced. I want her found. In my room, I write, Dear Miss Saunders, I wanted to say...
Mr. Fairley?
Yes?
Letter. Urgent, apparently.
Thank you, Beasley. Skippy?
Dear old fellow, it's lucky you've recovered from your accident, because Thorpe has let us down tonight at the Disobligers Society. He says he is ill. He calls it influenza, and we call it letting us down. So we want you to speak for us in the debate against the motion that the soul doesn't exist, has never existed, and that it isn't desirable that it should exist. Charles Redding is going to propose the motion. He's a theologian, and so, of course, he'll have to say that there's nothing we can be sure of except the body. And then you, Fred, as a rank unbeliever, will have to stick up for the soul. Afterwards, wine and biscuits.
Lord, I've only just got back.
Do I look untidy?
Very untidy, Mr. Fairley.
Dear Miss Saunders, I wanted to say... what do I want to say? I don't know. It's too late to think.
Could you repeat the actual words of the motion?
Dr. Matthews, of course. That the soul does not exist, has never existed, and that it is not desirable that it should exist.
Thank you. Unfortunately, although I listened to the proposer, I wasn't very well able to follow him.
The next speaker, Fred Fairley, opposes the motion. He was once a Christian, but is one no longer. Fred Fairley holds, as I do, that all we can do has to be done by ourselves and for ourselves while we are on this earth. Afterwards, there is nothing. Fred.
Fellow members, I am here to defend the soul. There may be some of you who will tell me that every hope, every feeling, even what we think of as the imagination, all of these are conditioned by organic processes. You are what your body is. It's inconceivable that the mind can survive without it. Still, which of you here hasn't been through some intense and extreme emotional crisis? A letter, perhaps, which you need to write, and yet you have to argue with yourself and say, go on, there is nothing for a rational human being to fear. But your body will reply, yes, there is. Well, even if there is, it is necessary for your self-respect to go on. No, it isn't. It's the voice of your adrenal gland. The body then has a mind of its own, so it must follow that the mind has a body of its own. And if we agree, as we must, that the mind has time and again shown its independence of the body, isn't it reasonable to believe that it may also do so by surviving death under its own steam? But I said, isn't it reasonable? I appealed, as a scientist, to your reason. This evening, however, that is the very last thing that I want to do. Fellow members and disobligers, I reject reason. I stand here this evening as a believer. I believe in gravitation without weight, life without organic matter, thought without nervous tissue, apparitions without known cause, water turned into wine, and souls without bodies.
I'm sure that the speaker doesn't intend to confuse either us or himself, but I must ask him, does he consider the soul and the mind as identical or as different and distinct?
Dr. Matthews, as chairman, I claim the right to answer the question. To imagine anything means to make a new junction between two currents of activity going along two or more tracks. Fred Fairley, perhaps, sees a bird flying over the fens, then he looks attentively at a young woman, and he combines the two of them and imagines an angel. That is how the imagination works. However, no two people see the external world in exactly the same way. To each person, a thing is what he thinks it is. In other words, not a thing, but a think.
I hurry home. Of course, I know what I want to say. Dear Miss Saunders, I want to say... I want to say that I want to marry you, but... who are you? Who are you, Daisy Saunders? And how did you come to be cycling to Cambridge?
Got rid of you on the tram. Mother? What's the matter?
It's your aunt.
What aunt? I haven't got an aunt.
Oh, you haven't now. Ellie's dead.
Don't grieve. You're not as sorry as all that.
If I'd been given time, I'd have been sorry.
What's that?
Oh, she's left me the end of a lease for a sublet in Hastings. For the next 5 years, I'll get £5 a quarter. I can leave the brewery.
Oh.
It'll make quite a difference to my way of life. Oh, she's left you her wedding ring.
Let's see.
I didn't even know she was married.
Whatever there is to know, that we shall know one day. That's what it says inside it.
Hey, what you doing?
I'm going to wear it. It'll make quite a difference to my way of life, particularly when I'm stuck on the tram with a load of men.
I've just given him my notice too, Mother.
I thought you liked working with all those bits of coloured glass.
That was the last job, at the glaziers. This one was cardboard boxes.
Oh, yes. But I suppose they were safer.
Well, the boxes were.
What about Ellie's wedding ring? Wouldn't that persuade Mr. Lambert to keep his hands to himself?
He knows I'm not married. We won't talk about him anymore.
Oh.
What is it?
Oh, nothing.
Here, sit down. It's all the excitement. It's making you tired.
No, no.
It's not such a sin to be tired.
Oh, it's a great mistake to admit it, though.
A heart attack, the doctor says. I feel the loss through and through. The solicitor tells me that the £5 quarterly payment for my aunt's house will end on my mother's death. Who gets it then?
That is not something that need concern you. Instead, you need to seriously consider your future.
I already have. I would like to become a nurse.
Ah. Well, there are two ways of entering nursing. Lady nurses pay for their training, wear an elegant uniform, and do not undertake any distasteful work. Then there are probationers. You, Miss Saunders, would, I imagine, have very little contact with lady nurses.
Are you a single woman?
I'm single.
You may call me matron.
I'm single, matron.
Vaccination certificate, yes.
Height? 5'6", I think.
It's not a matter of thinking. Educated at Victualler School. Certificate of good conduct and application. Have you any physical defects?
What kind of defects?
Any that I can't see. You may be subject to heavy periods. Have you any tendency to pulmonary complaints? Do you understand what I mean by pulmonary?
Yes, it means to do with the lungs.
Pertaining to the lungs. A sickly nurse is an enemy of the profession. Are you adverse to doing rough work in the wards?
No, I ain't.
What did you say?
No, I am not, matron.
Hmm. Well, you'll do, Saunders. You can obtain a copy of the regulations on your way out.
I am going to learn how the human body works and what has to be done when it doesn't work. I begin by plaiting female patients' hair before their operations so they feel comfortable and safe. I get myself shoes a size larger than I normally wear, some scented soap, and a second-hand copy of Kirk's Nursing Handbook so that I can begin to answer its questions. Should a heart case have a bath?
What's this?
If not, why not?
Beef tea.
How would you apply leeches?
Beef tea?
What is the best way of telling one end of a leech from the other?
All the bloodshed, matron, caused by the ambition of Napoleon is as nothing compared with the myriads of persons who have sunk into their graves from a misplaced confidence in the value of beef tea. It is like the mirage of water seen by the thirsty in the desert. There is no real water. So with beef tea, it is not a food. You, young woman, are a probationer in your first year.
Yes, Dr. Sage.
And your name?
What are your duties at the physician's visit? Saunders, sir.
Tell me, as a child, did you drink beef tea?
We used to drink the gravy, sir, from the cow heel.
Don't make the mistake, Saunders, of thinking you kept alive on that.
No, and don't make the mistake of thinking you can speak to a consultant like that. You're on night duty, so get off to the men's ward and keep an eye on number 23.
Yes, matron.
Go, go.
James Elder threw himself off the Adelphi steps into the Thames. Picked up by a passing Sprat boat.
Flo?
No. I'm a nurse. And you're safe in Blackfriars Hospital.
Why did you bring me here?
You've hurt your head and swallowed a lot of dirty water.
I had to do that, Flo.
No, I'm not Flo. I'm a probationer. I want to take your temperature. Open your mouth, please. What would you do to calm a restless patient? You can talk to your family in the morning, Mr. Elder.
I haven't any family.
Then talk to your friends. There now. Your temperature's normal.
Nothing's normal, Flo. I'm a suicide, aren't I?
Who is Flo?
Not a friend. I haven't any friends. Will it be in the papers? Flo might see a headline. Whopping Clark attempts suicide.
There's lots of Clarks in Whopping.
But they don't all try to take their own lives.
It's not your own life. How did you get that idea?
I don't think you're meant to talk to me like that. Run out at once and buy me a morning paper.
They won't be out yet. And you need visitors, not papers. Flo. Is that Flora or Florence?
Bitch!
Morning, all.
We understand a man was brought in here after jumping off the Adelphi steps.
I have no intention of discussing our patient.
Constable, you have come here to linger at the bedside of an unfortunate who has attempted what is still legally a crime. If this man had in fact succeeded and drowned himself, would you then have dragged the oozing cadaver into the magistrate's court?
We would just like to be notified if the man is discharged. These cases usually make a good recovery if they're given plenty of beef tea.
Are you now suggesting force feeding? They tell me it's legal to do it, to lunatics and to women who want to have the vote.
Just let us know when he's been discharged.
Dr. Sage, Mr. Elder hasn't eaten for 2.5 days. I know it's silly, but he says he'll never eat again.
At my mental home near Cambridge, I have learned that what is said by children and the mentally disturbed should be considered just as seriously as by anyone else.
I'm surprised that Dr. Sage is a supporter of women's suffrage.
He's not. He doesn't think anyone should have the vote at all.
What would you do to calm a restless patient?
Hello.
Don't ask me if I want to put in an advertisement. I want to see the editor.
Sit down, dear, and turn off the hot tap.
This is my half day off, so I haven't got much time. I need you to print a paragraph about a man who tried to commit suicide a few days ago. He says his name is James Elder.
Well, anyone can say that. You'll probably find he's called Younger. Swallowed something, did he?
No. He threw himself off the Adelphi steps.
Are you a relative?
No, I'm not. Are you the editor of the Blackfriars, Vauxhall and Temple Gazette?
I'm Thomas Kelly.
I'm Daisy Saunders.
What's your game, Daisy?
I haven't got a game. I've brought you a story. Better than all the usual ones about hats and kittens. Mr. Elder's in the Blackfriars. He won't eat. He's letting himself die there.
We've got the Blackfriars tied up. If a doctor cut off a couple of legs too many, there's someone who gives the word. I've heard nothing about James Elder. Are you sure you're not a relation?
No. I don't hardly know him.
So, what good would it do you if we did print it?
None. But it might do him some good.
You're a nurse at the Blackfriars, aren't you?
Do I look like a nurse?
Yes, you do.
Well, I'm not a nurse. Yet. I'm a probationer. So, you're not going to print the story, right?
Where are you off to?
To see another editor.
Are you sure? You're nursing this lucky joker, and you're supposed to keep all his details confidential. You're in trouble, Daisy. So how about we start again, you and me? I don't often get a young woman coming in here by herself.
Mystery of ministering angel, James Elder, at present lying at the point of death in the Blackfriars Hospital.
But he's not. He was gone when I got back.
His story has been related exclusively to the Gazette by a charming informant who throughout the interview remained closely veiled.
Flo came and took him away. That is, a woman by the name of Florine Harris.
Giving the suspicion that she was a member of the nursing staff at the hospital. Well, Saunders?
I never thought he'd write that.
You gave information about a patient to a newspaper, yet you didn't expect it to be printed?
I did at first, then I didn't, and I wasn't wearing a veil.
Why did you go there, Saunders?
The patient was restless. I thought it would calm him if he could see something about himself in the paper.
You have been trained at this hospital to think, but not to think that you know best. You were doing very well. And now you must leave. Immediately.
Leave? It's when I go to hand back my uniform that I know it's true. And I want to run away then, anywhere. But the other nurses have bought me a leaving present. So I stay to let them give me a travelling salt and pepper set. It reminds me that Dr. Sage is travelling back to his mental home that day, and I decide to go and see him.
One day return to Cambridge.
Mr. Kelly, yeah. You again.
I told you I had the black fries covered. A little bird told me you were off to find a new job. A pretty little bird, but not as pretty as you.
Oh, well, she was right. I'm off. Thank you. My train's leaving in 2 minutes.
So's mine. Same again, please, mate. Darn.
What a coincidence!
Isn't it?
You must be more than ordinarily fond of men to risk losing your job on account of this James Elder.
I didn't mean to lose it. I love nursing.
Is that right? And do you know Cambridge well?
I don't know it at all.
Then I'll watch out for you and see as you come to no harm. In fact, I know a nice little hotel quite near the station.
Where they don't ask no questions. And if they did, they'd ask me, what on earth are you doing here with that little runt?
It'll be your first time, won't it?
I suppose when I came into your office like that, you thought I looked easy.
You need a man, Daisy. I won't marry you, that's not my style, apart from being married already, but I'll look after you.
You mean you'll pay for a night in a hotel?
2 nights, Daisy, 3, it's nothing. You just want to take a couple of whiskies.
I don't drink.
Is that true?
No. I never had a whiskey, though.
It was the first time for everything. What else can you do? There isn't anyone else wants you. Come on, you'll enjoy the ride.
What? Are we getting bicycles?
Well, that's an idea. Why not? The ride of your life, Daisy.
My name's Frederick Fairley. I'm a lecturer in practical physics at Cambridge University.
I'm Daisy Saunders.
I think I've had an accident. I think you too have had an accident.
Where's my cycle?
Mr. Fairley, there's a Mr. Rayburn wants to see you. He's under the walnut tree.
Well, thank you, Beasley. Mr. Rayburn.
Ah, it's a somewhat delicate matter, Fairley. She is the only person I ever remember arriving at our house on a laundry van.
Who?
Miss Saunders, of course.
She's come back?
Yes, to work for Dr. Sage at his hospital.
So what did she say? She must have asked for me as you took the trouble to come here.
She never mentioned you, but I took the trouble because I want no further burden of housekeeping on Venetia's shoulders, not to mention the strain on my nerves. All I require...
Are you saying that Daisy is staying in your house?
She said she had nowhere else to go, so I am afraid my wife has accommodated her in one of the attics reserved for one of the servants, which we do not have. You can't expect me to occupy myself with such matters.
I don't expect it. You came here because you didn't want your wife to be responsible for her. Of course you didn't. Of course, she mustn't be. But have the sense not to let Daisy slip. Lock the doors. Talk to her quietly. If that doesn't work, give her a sleeping draught. Knock her on the head. And for God's sake, don't let her go back to London again.
You told us you had no connection with this woman. You're unbalanced, Fairley.
I haven't any connection with her, you cretin. Can't you see? That's the trouble.
Good morning, Daisy. May one call you that? Would you care for an apple?
No, thank you, Mrs. Rayburn.
I have decided that we should live more simply. Fruit, vegetables, the minimum of tea or coffee.
I hope you won't mind if I say this, Mrs. Rayburn, but I don't think your husband's ever going to get used to living simply. This is a big house with a lot of work needed, and There doesn't seem to be anyone doing it.
You mean all the empty bedrooms?
And the very full sink.
So you are saying?
In my spare time from Dr. Sage's hospital, I can take care of the house.
Then the attic is yours as long as you want it. Oh, and a note just arrived for you.
Thank you.
Nothing bad, I hope.
No, not at all. Fred Fairley has invited me to go for a walk in the country on my day off.
So here we are. Imagine, Daisy and I out walking in Whittlesford, but not over green fields. As we left the station, we passed a house that was for sale, and Daisy wanted to get the keys from the ironmonger so we could look around it.
It cheers you up, looking round an empty house. It's like shopping. You don't have to buy anything, but you can turn things over.
Well, it's not empty. It's full of paper.
Leaflets, church notices, bits of letters. I could read these all day. I don't get many letters.
I wish I didn't. People are rather too given to sending notes in Cambridge.
One plate, no knife, one fork, one spoon. All by himself, I suppose. Poor man.
It might have been a woman.
You'd never get a woman living like this.
Oh, there's a loose floorboard.
Where he kept his money, I expect.
I'll take a look.
No, that's unlucky.
It would be more interesting if I were actually looking for a house.
That would ruin it. You'd be worrying about drains, the size of rooms, the cost.
Perhaps that's the difference between men and women. Women like to live on their imagination.
It's all they can afford, most of them. Come on, let's go for our walk. I don't think that ironmonger was took in. He knew he'd no intention of buying. He could see how the land lay.
How does it lie, Daisy?
Well, this is only the second time we've met, and we aren't anything to each other.
Don't you know what you are to me?
I suppose I do. Even a child of six would notice it.
Oh, and that's just what I want. No, I want children of six to notice it. I want ironmongers to notice it.
Fred, did you ever take out a girl before?
I've never taken out a girl I've wanted to marry before.
She may not have known that, though.
Why should they matter, Daisy? Why, even if they existed, should they matter? Anyway, they don't exist and didn't exist. They're unobservables.
Oh, those birds. Were they quails?
No, I'm afraid they were field fares.
That's a pity. I should like to have seen a quail. Oh, these flowers, though.
Mouse ears, chickweed.
This one's different. It's throatwort. You have to be very careful if you're thinking of making medicine out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It could make things worse. Look, five petals.
They've all got five petals. Is it really called throatwort?
No. I've no idea what it's called. I only said it to keep things going.
You must always tell me the truth. I'm lost. I can't depend on you.
They depended on me at the Blackfriars. I'm a good nurse. Matron said I was the sort she wanted.
Why did you leave then?
There's a rule that you mustn't discuss patients' cases, not outside the hospital.
And you did?
Yes, I did.
Why, Daisy?
I thought it would help save his life.
And it did?
No, it didn't.
Did he die?
No, but his life didn't need saving.
Daisy, will you marry me?
I know you don't say what you don't mean.
Will you think about it?
I don't say I won't, Fred.
Miss Saunders, are you busy?
I'm washing your undergarments, Mr. Raven.
Miss Saunders, have you ever happened to hear Verdi's opera La Traviata?
An opera? No.
In La Traviata, the hero, a simple, honourable man of good family, becomes obsessed with Violetta, a woman of light reputation. The hero's father arrives in Paris and pleads with him to come back to Old Provence.
Why is it Old Provence?
The father, you see, fears that if his son cannot be separated from the Traviata, his life and career will be ruined.
Are you saying I'm no good for Fred?
If Fairley marries you, or indeed any other woman, however suitable, he will have to give up his position at St. Angelica's. The master and fellows are all celibates. No woman is even allowed to set foot in the college.
Why are you telling me this? Fred could have told me himself if he'd wanted to.
That is my drift. He's very unlikely to want to.
Mr. Fairley?
Yes?
A letter for you, Mr. Fairley, from Dr. Matthews.
Thank you, Beasley.
He says you should read it at once.
As I just said, thank you, Beasley. Dear Mr. Fairley, I have been pondering your bicycle accident and have come to the conclusion that it is more mysterious than you have given yourself to believe. For instance, the person driving the cart you ran into has disappeared. What is to be done? If we want to find a man who has caused material damage to two bicycles ridden by a man and a woman, but here I have to pause a while, was there not a third bicyclist, and has he not too disappeared? These thoughts I have conveyed in some detail to the police, and already a summons has been issued to George Turner, farmer, for having provided a carter with an unsafe vehicle not showing front or rear lights, as specified by the Road Lighting Act 1904, also holding him responsible for his employee, who drove the above-mentioned cart without reasonable care, causing injuries to Frederick Fairley and Daisy Saunders, and damage to their machines. I understand a court inquiry is imminent. You, Mr. Fairley, Miss Saunders and Mrs. Raeburn will be called as witnesses, and the police are continuing inquiries into the whereabouts of the third bicyclist so that he, too, may be called. Yours in anticipation, Matthews, Doctor, Provost of St. James's.
Cheer up, Daisy. It'll soon be over.
I can't smile, Mrs. Raeburn.
Silence! Oh.
I feel as though I'll never smile again.
Mr. Fairley, on the night in question, was it pitch dark?
No, but dark enough.
And you are a scientist?
If you mean that as a scientist I'm not able to look where I'm going, then you're mistaken.
Mrs. Raeburn, you are a housewife.
I should be a graduate, if the university allowed women to take degrees.
And on the night of February 26th, you discovered a man and a woman lying in the road. So you found Mr. George Turner's son, who conveyed the two victims to your house on a handcart.
Is Mr. Turner's son in court?
He's been taken poorly, but in a sworn statement he says that he didn't know who his father had hired to drive the horse and cart.
You're lucky you got as much sense out of him as that!
Mr. Turner, you will have an opportunity to speak later.
Miss Saunders, Mr. Fairley has said that you were riding beside another bicyclist, a man who would have been a witness to the accident. Could you tell the court his name?
No, I couldn't.
You don't know who he was?
No, I don't.
But you were bicycling with him?
I was cycling behind him.
It would be a great help to the police if you could give any idea of where this man might be found.
If I don't know who he is, how can I know where he's gone?
Thank you, Miss Saunders, that is all. A moment, Your Worship. Your Worship, may I inform you that the witness has been found and that I can now call him in person. He got here 10 minutes ago.
Very well.
Oh, no.
Thomas Kelly,
what is it,
swear
Daisy?
By Almighty God
Daisy?
Tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Kelly, will you please tell the court where you were on the evening of February 26th?
I was on a cycle ride coming back to Cambridge.
And did you reach Cambridge?
Not till late. I only just missed being hit by a horse and cart and had to swerve clean across the road.
Can you identify the driver of the cart?
Yes, I can. When he saw what he'd done, he jumped down and ran off towards the farmhouse.
Can you describe him?
I don't need to do that. He's sitting just there. Oh. He was you driving the
liar.
Cart.
Constable, remove Mr. Turner from the court. Mr. Kelly, what exactly did you do after the accident?
I went to Pett's Hotel. I had a room booked there for the night with Daisy Saunders.
Are you referring to Miss Saunders, who is in court as a witness?
Yes. I got gypped, though.
Why did you not report the accident immediately?
I didn't want it to get about. We were going to a hotel together. I didn't want to cock it all up for her.
So what has made you come forward now?
I've changed my mind. Now I do want to cock it all up for her.
Daisy leaves without speaking to me, or even looking at me. And Kelly is detained to sign a deposition. I come to this small cafe over the road and order a cup of tea and two biscuits, and for 3 hours I have sat here alone thinking of nothing.
Would you like me to light the gas so you can read?
Well, that's not true. It's impossible to think of nothing.
I don't want to read. I don't need the gas.
Oh, well, could you perhaps sit by the window to give some atmosphere, you know, if anyone's passing? Perhaps if you could smile a bit? That's better.
Look, if the police kept someone in there to ask him questions, when they let him out, surely he'd cross the road and come in here.
No, he wouldn't. They want to get away as quickly as possible.
But I'm waiting for someone to come out. That's what I'm sitting here for.
Will you be ordering something further, then?
Yes, the same again.
And some for your friend?
No, nothing for him. He's not my friend. I don't even want to speak to him.
You've waited 3 hours.
I want to hit him. And now I can.
Got you! So you're the school teacher.
Ow.
Fairly. There's a man, you know, lying on the pavement quite close to you.
Skippy. Yes, I knocked him over.
I say. But I don't think he can stay here. So, I've got his feet. You grab the other end.
Right.
Fairly, this incident is not characteristic of you. It's hardly rational.
What's being rational got to do with it? Where are we going?
Well, round the corner into the Botanic Gardens, I should think. In any event, I want to see Batty. Perhaps you've met him. Botanic morphology and homology?
No.
I want to get him to speak next week at the Disobliger Society for the motion that we'd be far better off without trees. There we are.
I don't see anyone.
This big wire basket full of clippings. Put him in here. A reasonable standard of comfort, don't you think?
No. A bird flying over the fen. A young woman. An angel. That's all I can think of. Two currents of activity moving along separate tracks. And in 10 minutes, I'm due to give a talk to my first-year practical physics students. I take a taxi back to St. Angelicus, and at the Porter's Lodge, telephone the Botanic Gardens to inquire whether there was a man, perhaps taken ill, in a large grass basket. And the head gardener says that, yes, there had been a man, but when they'd found him, he'd run for it. And he'd not been too ill to climb a fence.
So, having concluded this lecture, I should like to remind you that 2 weeks ago, I asked you to write an essay. Now, I have your papers here, but I'm not going to give them back to you because I am not quite satisfied with them. I asked you to devise a rational system for measuring human happiness. All of you look startled. A physicist, sitting down to answer such a question, you seem to think, would be a freak. I, however, wanted to remind you that there is no difference whatever between scientific thought and ordinary thought. Whatever you do, gentlemen, don't, as scientists, believe you are anything extraordinary. Don't allow yourselves for a moment to feel anything like contempt for those whose minds work differently from your own. Because their minds do not work differently from your own. And remember, too, that scientists are not dispassionate. Your judgment will, in part, be dependent on your digestion, your prejudices, and above all, your emotional life. You must face the fact that if another human being whose
welfare means considerably more to you than your own, behaves in a very different way from anything you had expected, then your efficiency may be impaired. When the heart is breaking, it is nothing but an absurd illusion to think that you can taste blood. Still, I repeat, your efficiency may be impaired.
I feel as though I've done nothing but wait all day.
Who are you? What do you want?
Dr. Sage.
There's nothing wrong, you know, with my patients here.
I am looking for a nurse Saunders.
Oh, we have no nurse of that name.
But she came here from London.
Saunders is here, but she's not a nurse. She is a ward maid. She takes her break at 6:30 via the service entrance. It's round the back.
Daisy.
So, you've caught me out. Again. I'm not a nurse. Not anymore. Dr. Sage didn't give me a nurse's place. Of course he didn't.
Well, that doesn't matter, Daisy.
It matters to me. He's still at the Blackfriars 3 days a week, so he knew what happened. He's taken me on for the washing. We have a lot of incontinence here.
That's not what I want to ask you about, Daisy.
I didn't think you'd come out to this place.
I shall always come to where you are. How could you not know that? Oh, but Daisy,
what?
It's all horrible. Pet Hotel is horrible. You can take rooms there by the hour.
Well, that's handy for some.
Don't talk like that.
Well, I never went there. I was going to, but as it turned out, I didn't.
Oh, but Daisy, he's horrible. Kelly is horrible.
Perhaps he wouldn't do for Cambridge, but it takes all sorts.
Not that sort. In heaven's name, how could you go to Cambridge or anywhere else with one of that sort?
Because I felt down. I told you how I lost my place at the hospital. I didn't count on meeting Kelly at Liverpool Street. But when I did, even though I didn't like him, still, he was better than no one.
Why did you say in court that you didn't know who he was? I mean, was it...
I don't tell lies unless I've got to.
Because you were afraid that my feelings...
I was afraid he might turn up here now. I can't think what might have happened to him.
Well, I can set your mind at rest. He is, or was, until a short time ago, in a rubbish bin at the Botanic Gardens.
What?
I had to knock him down, Daisy.
But he's older than you. His hair's dyed. You must have noticed. He has to pretend to be young in his line of business, but then he didn't have your advantages. You think of that next time you come across a poor old sod like Kelly.
This is all wrong. Neither of us is saying what we mean.
My break's over. Don't come again, Fred. You won't find me here.
But is that true, Daisy? Is it the truth?
Goodbye, Fred.
That was at 7.
Are you all right, Fairley?
At 8:30, I call in on Professor Flowerdew.
I apologise, Professor Flowerdew. I'm not quite myself this evening. Are you ready for me to accompany you to the evening discourse?
I'm not sure. Ernest Rutherford himself is not able to come, but he has sent his personal assistant and a young research student. No, I don't think I shall go to hear them, but I shall be grateful if you could take very complete notes. To base one's calculations on unobservables such as God, such as the soul, such as the atom, there's nothing more than a comforting weakness.
I do know that there is no God, no spiritual authority, no design. There is no purpose in the universe, but if there were...
like all ordinary human beings, you need comfort.
If there were, it could be shown that there was an intention throughout recorded and unrecorded time to give me Daisy.
But scientists should not indulge themselves on quite this scale. Call in again when you get back to college. If you find I have dozed off, what will you do?
I might wake you by playing something on your piano.
Oh, but gently, gently. Yes, you don't look well. Are you in money trouble?
I am unhappy, Professor.
Well, perhaps there is no need to call in.
I hate leaving Dr. Sage. He gives his patients both care and trust. That was what I wanted to give, what the Blackfriars gave to me. Tomorrow, Dr. Sage will read all about me in the Cambridge News. and my last hope of being a nurse will be gone. I feel as though I've done nothing but wait all day. Oh, Mrs. Raeburn, I've come to say goodbye. I can't stay in Cambridge, not after what happened in court.
No, Daisy.
Who'd have thought of Kelly turning up like
that? Oh, indeed.
I've come to collect my things and to give you something, a sort of memento.
I don't think I'm likely to forget you, Daisy.
This ring, it's got looser since I've been here.
No, it hasn't. It's exactly the same size. You mean you've got thinner? But anyway, you mustn't give me this. It's a wedding ring.
I don't think it is, Mrs. Raeburn. It was my Aunt Ellie's, and she never married. I looked like someone who was taking kittens out to drown and then changed their mind. All my worldly possessions, my hairbrush, my stays, lavender water, prayer book, my faithful companions, my only companions, not even any bicycles on this dark road. Oh well. So, the station. Left down Jesus Lane. No, that's wrong. I'll have to go right somewhere to get back to St. Andrew Street. But where? It's all so dim and narrow. And this wall goes on and on and on. Can't be a college. A prison, perhaps. But there's a door. And it's open. And there's nothing. Only a great walnut tree. Sir? Can I help you? I'm a nurse. What are you doing? Out here in the dark?
The door?
Now, just lie there for a little.
I felt it open. The current of air, fresh air, coming in.
Shh, don't worry. Sometimes quite small things can cause a drop in the blood pressure.
The door is open.
What's the matter with you? You need to cover him up warm and call the doctor.
Sure, it can't be.
There, you'll be all right. Just let go of my hand. That's it. I have a train to catch. Look after him. I'm too late already, of course. Why did I walk so way off track? 3 minutes in there. 3 minutes too late to catch the train. So, I'll just keep going and watch it leave. What else can I do?
Walking back along the same track to the same place, but at a different time. 3 minutes saved. 3 minutes not playing the piano for Flower Dew, just letting him sleep. So, I'm early. But nothing else has changed.
Hello, Fred.
Hello, Daisy.
In The Gate of Angels by Penelope Fitzgerald, Fred Fairley was played by Geoffrey Stretfield and Daisy Saunders by Jade Williams. Raeburn and Dr. Sage were James Lely. Venetia and the Matron, Tracy Wiles. Kelly, Carl Prekop. Dr. Matthews, Gerard McDermott. Flower Dew and the Master, Paul Moriarty. Skippy, Simon Bubb, and Beasley was Ricky Lawton. Other parts were played by Adjoa Ando, Victoria Inez Hardy, and Adam Billington. The Gate of Angels was dramatised by Yvonne Antrobus, and the director was Mark Beebe.
Ken Clark discusses another jazz great next, but first a word from Sarah Montague.
Fishnets, rice, water, Brad and Janet. It's a long time since I dressed up for a Rocky Horror show, but I was reminded of it picking the best of this week's radio. Aside from the sweet transvestites of Transylvania, we'll be dancing with the fabulous Gene Kelly as we waltz through his life with Len Goodman. There's sex, too, with, or should I say from, the ever-so-modest French philosopher Bernard-Henri Lévy. And we can't do without a bit of money, or should that be a lot of money, as we hear a surprising account of how it feels to become suddenly, seriously rich. So come dance with me, Sarah Montague, tomorrow evening at 6:15.
Now on Radio 4, it's Jazz Greats with Ken Clark. In the final programme of the series, Abraham Wilson joins Ken to discuss the music of the trumpeter Clifford Brown.
Hello, I'm Ken Clark, and welcome to Jazz Greats. Today we're turning to the supremely gifted trumpeter and composer, Clifford Brown. He was given a trumpet by his father at the age of 15, but he must have had a quick natural talent. In 1948, only 3 years after he picked up the instrument for the first time, he was playing gigs with artists such as Miles Davis, Kenny Dorham, and Fats Navarro. By the age of 22, he already had a very original style, and the quintet he went on to form with Max Roach is regarded by many people, including me, as one of the very best of the 1950s. He had the most sublime trumpet sounds in the whole...